This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Thank you. Here are Wednesday's closing grain futures quotes from the Chicago Board of Trade. May corn, 374 and three quarters, up 3 3/4. July corn, 382 and three quarters, up 3 3/4. September corn, 390.5, up 3 3/4. May soybeans, 965, up 10.5. July soybeans, 969 3/4, up 10 1/4. August soybeans, 969 1/4, up 10. May wheat, 510 3/4, up 7 1/4. July wheat, 514 1/4, up 7.5. September wheat, 524, up 7.5. Now time for your cash grain report from the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Thank you. This is Jerry Milberg with the Illinois Department of Agriculture with Wednesday's Grain Market Report. The Illinois country grain prices did end higher on Wednesday afternoon, and while cash corn bids did close higher, a weaker basis at many river terminals due to higher barge freight did limit gains. In northern and western Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shell corn bids up 4 cents at 347 to 370, while soybean bids were 9 to 11 higher at 931 to 950. In central Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shell corn bids up 4 cents at 341 to 369, and soybean bids were 11 cents higher at 938 to 966. In the southern part of the state, shell corn bids were 4 cents higher at 351 to 375, soybean bids up 11 to 15 cents at 941 to 975, and the wheat bids gained 4 to 7 at 424 to 485. Illinois soybean processor cash soybean bids were 11 cents higher at 968 to 982, basis steady ranging from 3 to 17 over the May. Hypro 48% soybean meal on a truck basis offered at 350.80 to 351.80, that's up $3.30 per ton, with basis steady ranging from 30 to 31 over the May. Illinois corn processor cash corn bids 4 cents higher at 370 to 381 with basis steady at 5 under to 6 over the May. Illinois river barge loading elevators quoted producer corn bids 3 to 6 cents lower for the day at 361 to 370 with basis down 7 to 10 cents at 14 under to 5 under the May. Soybeans up 6 to 9 cents at 960 to 968 with basis down 2 to 5 cents at 5 under to 3 over the May. And new crop wheat prices ended 8 cents higher on Wednesday at 494 to 508, with basis steady at 20 under to 6 under July. East St. Louis barge loading terminal elevators place their producer corn bids mostly 2 cents higher at 385 to 389. These same elevators raised their soybean prices by 6 to 7 cents, with quotations at 983 to 985. Soft wheat 7 cents higher at 511 to 521. And Milo ended 4 cents stronger for the day at 435 to 450. Contract bids to producers for new crop delivered grain in northern and western Illinois. Country elevator bids to producers in those regions for new crop corn range from 355 up to 373. New crop soybean bids at 891 to 9 1/4. In central Illinois, new crop corn bids range from 355 up to 370. New crop soybean bids range from 903 up to 930. And in the southern part of the state on Wednesday, new crop corn bids range from 360 up to 371, new crop soybean bids at 894 up to 921, and wheat bids for June-July delivery in southern Illinois, those range from 472 up to 502. That completes our country grain report for Wednesday. This is Jerry Milberg with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
And here are Wednesday's closing livestock futures quotes from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. April live cattle, $156.57, up $3. June live cattle, $148.47, up $3. August live cattle, $146.40, up $2.85. March feeder cattle, $214.25, up $2.67. April feeder cattle, $214.30, up $4.27. May feeder cattle, $213.42, up $4.50. April lean hogs, $60.70, down $1.07. May lean hogs, $71.15, down 92 cents. June lean hogs, $75.12, down 67 cents. Now time for your cash livestock report from the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Thank you. This is Bob Reese with the Illinois Department of Agriculture with Wednesday the 18th afternoon livestock report. Starting with the National Daily Direct Hog Report, calculations for a 200-pound pork carcass traded 94 cents lower in the range of $50 to $59.50 with a weighted average carcass price of $57.89. From the Illinois Direct Sow Report, slaughter sows were trading mostly steady for moderate demand for moderate offerings. U.S. 1 and 3 grade sows under 400 pounds traded at 28 to 34. 4 to 5 weights, 32 to 37. 5 to 6 weights, 35 to 40. And 6 weights and up, 37 to 42. On the Illinois Direct Hog Trade, barrels and gilts at country buying points were trading a dollar lower with moderate demand for moderate to heavy offerings, ranging in price from $36 to $40. Receipts for Illinois hogs today totaled 9,668 head. And now for the report from the United Producers Auction at Shelbyville, they had receipts of 569 head. Starting with the choice slaughter steers, they were 160 to 165. Choice slaughter Holstein steers, 150 to 154.50. And choice slaughter heifers, 160 to 164. On to the slaughter cows, they had some premiums, bringing 140. Boners were 104 to 118, with some high dressing at 120.50 to 130. Leans were 92 to 105.50. Now they also had a fair run of feeder cattle, starting with the feeder steers, medium and large ones. 5 weights were 235 to 256. Feeder heifers, medium and large ones. 4 weights were 220 to 243, and 5 weights were 221 to 231. On to feeder bulls, 4 weights were 244 to 281, and 5 weights were 230 to 238. 6 weights were 220 to 233. Now moving on to the Walnut Livestock Auction. They had receipts of 424 head. This was a special feeder cattle sale. Starting with the steers, medium and large ones and twos, 5 weights were 258 to 266, 6 weights 245 to 257. Feeder steers, large ones and twos, 5 weights were 247.50 to 287.50, and 6 weights were 244 to 257. Feeder Holstein steers, they had some 3 weights bring 230, and 4 weights brought 215. Feeder heifers, medium and large ones, 4 weights were 261 to 265, and 5 weights 250 to 258. Now from the National Box Beef Cutout Report, values for choice and select beef carcasses were trading lower. Choice carcasses, 246.80, that was 24 lower, with select carcasses at 244.47, that was 32 cents lower. For the estimated daily slaughter under federal inspection, cattle slaughter was estimated at 107,000, that compared to 103,000 last week and 118,000 a year ago. Hog slaughter was estimated at 436,000. That compared to 433,000 last week and 413,000 a year ago. That concludes our report. I'm Bob Reese with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
That's all for part one of this morning's farm show. Stay tuned for part two, where we'll hear about some new and interesting information from the National Agricultural Statistics Service. That's coming up after this. Most farms are a family business. Whether small or large, on the East Coast or West Coast, family farms produce food for people all across the U.S. and the world. USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service is celebrating the diversity of the American family farmer this National Ag Week by helping answer this question, what is a family farmer? Ginger Harris is a demographer with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service.
Family farms make up almost the entirety of U.S. farms. 97% of the 2.1 million farms in the U.S. are family-owned operations. That is, the majority of the operation is owned by people who are related by blood, marriage, or adoption.
Family farms produce almost all of the food grown in the U.S., according to Harris.
While 97% of all farms in the U.S. are these family-owned operations, they're producing 84% of all the products in the U.S. Most of what we eat, and if we're wearing cotton or wool that's produced in the U.S., that's coming from a family-owned operation.
Harris says 88% of all U.S. farms are relatively small family farms.
What's sold at farmers markets, much of that is coming from small family farms. 58% of all direct farm sales to consumers are coming from small family farms, and those are places with under $350,000 in gross receipts from agricultural income.
Harris says many of the large farms are still family-owned and operated.
A cow may start out on a small family farm and during its life cycle move up to a large family farm where it's sold for meat, but these farms are engaging at every point in the ag economy. Each of these different types of operations may specialize in something different, but they're all important to U.S. agriculture.
NASS relies on family farmers across the country to share information about their operations by responding to official surveys. And thanks to those who have shared their information, the compiled survey results better inform the public about the nature of family farming in the U.S. You can visit agcensus.usda.gov for more information about family farms. USDA has just wrapped up its survey of more than 80,000 U.S. farmers. Todd Gleason reports on how the agency uses the information to develop its March 31st acreage forecast.
Well, in the spring, USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service Division contacts farmers in hopes of learning how much of each crop they expect to plant. The agency contacts farmers across the United States. Corn and soybean farmers are of particular interest. This year, more than 4,000 Kansas farmers were tapped, along with around 3,700 in Nebraska and about 3,000 in each of the Dakotas, Iowa, and Illinois. Another 2,000 farmers each were contacted in Indiana and Ohio.
Our goal is to make sure that we're measuring small, medium, and large farms, so we use what's called a stratified sample.
That's NASS Illinois State Statistician Mark Schleusner.
That's a fancy way of saying for the biggest farms, we're going to talk to all of them. For the large but not biggest, we'll draw a sample, maybe one out of three of those. And for medium size, maybe one out of 10. And for the smaller farms, there are lots of small farms in Illinois, and they do contribute to the total. We might only measure one out of 25 of those.
Each farmer surveyed is asked how many acres they operate, how much of that land they intend to plant to corn or soybeans, and how much might already be in wheat. They're also asked about oats and sorghum and hay. The response rate goal, and usually achievement, is an amazing 80%.
Yes, our goal is an 80% response rate on all surveys, and we use several methods of data collection. Every producer in a sample will get a letter saying, here's the reason why we're doing this. We're going to measure planting intentions, and we will put a questionnaire in there. That letter will also have instructions for reporting over the internet on our secure website. That's, in our mind, the best way for a producer to report, but if they want to fill out the paper questionnaire and put it in the postage-paid business reply envelope, that works too. Either of those are both inexpensive ways of gathering data, and that saves the government money, and by that I mean we're saving your money and my money. For the people who do not respond via the mail, we'll start calling, and we'll also send out people to interview face-to-face. Both of those methods are more effective in general, but they also are more expensive.
The biggest problem NASS faces when taking the acreage survey is that farmers usually have not yet made all their planting decisions. The agency knows this, and it's satisfied with best estimates. The individual reports, they're confidential by law, and the data collected, it's exempt from legal processes. The data can be aggregated at the county, state, and national level. Computers flag any large acreage changes at the individual level so that an analyst can check for a data entry error or make a follow-up call. The state statisticians review the total number of crop acres for any major changes. Total crop acres generally remain constant, and then submit the estimates in an encrypted file to USDA NASS in Washington, D.C. There, more analysis is done, and the final report is produced for release March 31. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Cover crops have been gaining in popularity nationwide for a variety of reasons. Farmers are seeing benefits through decreased soil compaction, decreased soil erosion, improved pest control, and more. But, as with many things in farming, using cover crops doesn't always turn up ideal results. David Moose of Auburn has been growing cover crops for 3 years now in the hopes of improving soil organic matter, with results that might have some farmers deciding to scratch the idea of using cover crops.
I've been satisfied probably one out of the last 3 years. I think establishment has been one of the biggest issues in year two and three, but I'm working through this and I will succeed.
To help combat establishment issues, Moose is hoping to change up the varieties of cover crops he uses.
Yeah, I think I have to adjust my varieties that I'm planting to accommodate a more timely planting of the cover crops. I'd also like to experiment with different species to try to build different organisms in the soil. Presently, I'm using annual rye, cereal rye, crimson clover, tillage radishes. In the future, I'd like to maybe experiment with Austrian winter peas, some hairy vetch, maybe some turnips.
After utilizing cover crops for a few years, Moose says others who are thinking of getting into cover crops need to make sure they are ready to commit to a long-term project on their farm and learn from their experiences year to year.
Well, I would have to say that it's not for the faint of heart. It does take a total commitment, and it's not a year-to-year thing, but just like no-till, I feel like I'm going through the growing pains right now of what that was, but I feel like going forward, I've learned a lot of things that will make me successful.
As for his future with cover crops, Moose says he will continue the practice until he has perfected it, stating he believes it will pay off in the future.
Well, it goes back to that goal that I want to build organic matter and to, you know, prevent erosion. And I think down the line there will be more rules and regulations prohibiting doing certain applications of fertilizer and chemicals. So I'm trying to get ahead of the curve on that.
Again, that was Auburn farmer David Moose speaking about his experience with cover crops. That's all for this morning's Farm Show. For WSMI, I'm Angela Besh. Thanks for tuning in.